This is KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food. This is what the news in California has sounded like for the last 14 months.
Hello, and welcome to a special edition of KQED Newsroom, Cannabis at a Crossroads. I'm Twee Vu. On this program, we'll take an in-depth look at marijuana in the Golden State. In November 2016, California voters passed Proposition 64, legalizing cannabis for recreational use. Starting in 2018, adults 21 and over will be able to carry and consume an ounce of pot recreationally. They can also grow up to 6 plants at home.
Marijuana is a sensitive subject with lots of stigma attached to it, even though the public voted to legalize recreational cannabis. As of January 1st, it is now legal to sell, buy, and consume marijuana and marijuana products for recreational use for those 21 years or older. So we thought it was appropriate that the Playing With Food crew seize the opportunity to create with cannabis. I have only one friend who I know uses marijuana. I myself know very little about it. So as marijuana became legal, I thought it might be a nice gesture to make my friend a cannabis-infused cake for his birthday. I don't know where to start, so let me go to the internet. Okay, so let's put in marijuana chocolate cake. Oh look, there's a YouTube video for cannabis chocolate cake. Let's click on that. Oh, a lovely video. Beautiful looking cake. Oh, no words. Just a video. The video for the beautiful cannabis chocolate cake was just like any other chocolate cake. All the same methods, bake it for just as long, and all the same ingredients, except for one. Cannabis butter? Where do I get that? I doubt that the food co-op carries cannabis butter, and I'm 100% certain that the supermarkets don't. Let me go back online.
Cannabis butter, San Luis Obispo. It just comes up with delivery services for San Luis Obispo. Let me call one of the delivery services.
Thank you for calling Elite Care California. Our hours are Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. To leave a message, please press 0.
So I'm Tammy Peluso. I'm a co-founder of Elite Care California. We're a mobile cannabis delivery service. We deliver flower, vapes, edibles, tinctures, and many other cannabis products. People always want to try to make brownies. That's like the one thing people think of cannabis and brownies. But nowadays, people are actually infusing olive oil, avocado oil. They're rolling their nuts in it. You name it, they're putting cannabis in it. There are many cookbooks out, actually, that are made just for recipes with cannabis.
Do you have a cookbook?
I actually do. Someone gave it to me for a Christmas present a couple of years ago, and I don't cook with cannabis. And I was actually, believe it or not, coming home from Puerto Vallarta, and I was in the airport walking through, and staring at you as you were walking through, there was a cannabis cookbook just right there on the aisleway for people to purchase.
I would like to try to get my hands on that cookbook, but maybe I don't have to make a cake at all. It sounds like there are lots of different products out there that can help me do something special for my friend.
Sean Bean, owner, The Source. So The Source is a cannabis delivery company located here in San Luis Obispo. We serve the entire county of San Luis Obispo. We sell some baked edibles, so, you know, cookies, brownies, also gummies, many different types of gummies. We also sell capsules, classified as an edible, you know, like in a pill form, some tinctures, so little alcohol dissolved droppers, like you would see maybe in a kind of an old school medicine bottle that you drop under your tongue. And we also even have some breath strips. They look exactly like the breath strips that you would buy at the gas station for fresh breath, except they're cannabis infused. I don't think they quite get you. They don't give you fresh breath. They give you something else.
I must apologize to the loyal followers of Playing With Food. I will not be creating with cannabis in my kitchen. There are way too many quality products available legally that can help me find the right thing for my friend. And they are probably higher quality.
And so a lot of the edible products, it depends on what you start with. So do you start with flowers, you know, that was that were grown outdoors, or flower that was grown indoors? The flower that was grown indoors will have a higher THC content and then will lead to a better edible. You know, the other ingredients, the flour, the sugar, whatever goes into it, that also makes a difference as well. Mixing, that's a big thing. So say you have a big vat and, you know, you put all your dry ingredients in, you put your can of butter in. If you don't really thoroughly mix that, you might have one edible that is a certain dose and you might have another edible that's another dose. So that's been an issue since edibles were being made in people's regular kitchens. You know, you might eat one and fall asleep on the couch in 10 minutes. And then the next one, you know, you don't feel anything. So there are definite better edibles, lesser edibles, and it all is the process that it's made and the ingredients that go into it.
Sean mentioned canna butter, but I don't need that now. I'm going to leave this to the professionals. Both Tammy and Sean guided me through the big wide world of cannabis edibles.
There's always that stigma with, you know, like you say, Cheech and Chong and the brownies, and oh, it's a pot brownie. And I have friends that, you know, call me and go, oh, what should I do to make a pot brownie? And they think it's funny. And you know, it's funny. I laugh. But it's really kind of frustrating for me, because that's why edibles get such a bad rap, because there is that stigma tied to it. And they really don't understand that they really would work for medicine. It's not just to play and get high and have fun with it. Myself, I don't like to be high. I've tried some edibles and it's affected me a lot more than I thought it was going to. And I hate it. I just don't like the feeling. A lot of edibles, they come in strain. Like our insomnia patients, we have edibles that are made with indica flower. So that's the other thing you want to look at and ask someone. If you're looking for an edible for sleep, you're of course going to want an indica product. You're not going to want a sativa product that's going to maybe uplift you and make you, you know, want to stay up for another 3 hours. And then the other word of caution is a lot of edibles are made with a hybrid. So it's a blend of a sativa and indica. And those ones that are hybrids do not tell you if it's 70% indica and 30% sativa. So you need to ask a lot of questions about the edible before you just get it and think you're going to use it for a certain condition. And sleep's a big one. A lot of times you'll be able to find an edible that's got melatonin in it, which is another sleep aid. So then it gives you a little added extra to help you with your sleep. You just have to be really careful when you're using an edible. All that out there with the whole joke about the cannabis brownie is really taking the edibles in a wrong direction. They really can be a medicinal option for someone, but you have to ask the questions, and the person that you're asking the questions has to really know their product and know what's in them and how they're made and how much is a dose. And hopefully they've talked to enough patients that have given them some feedback and they know really how it's affecting people differently.
This isn't the secret plate of brownies at the high school bake sale.
Exactly.
You know, with the industry still being federally illegal and only was medically legal up until this point, and not even every, you know, different areas of California accepted it differently. So I think all of the, you know, the edible manufacturers are still working out the kinks. There are a few that provide some marketing material, but it's kind of few and far between. Us as retailers are more, you know, are in charge of that. I have noticed, though, that it can be brand recognition with the edibles is important. And there's a few top tier brands that everybody knows and everybody can trust. And I think as we get further into this, more of those will develop. And I'm sure they will, you know, sharpen up their business models, start providing more marketing help, marketing material, and maybe themselves just doing general marketing. You know, if we look at the way other industries are, and say for different food industries, the brands market themselves, not necessarily the retailers that sell them. So you think of TV commercials for microwave popcorn. They'll have a TV advertisement specifically for them, not necessarily saying you can buy it at Ralph's supermarket or you can buy it at the source. That hasn't happened yet. Part of that is going to be because there's some strict marketing rules. Brands themselves are kind of leaving it up to the retailers as far as marketing goes.
I'm getting the sense that it's really no longer about the pot brownie, and my efforts to make a cannabis chocolate cake would definitely be more work than I need to undertake. But now the chemist in me is beginning to get curious. If the active ingredient, THC, is being used in different ways in the wide variety of products, How is that happening and who is doing it? Unfortunately, I couldn't get a hold of any of the cannabis edible producers. None of them returned my emails or phone calls. So I rang up my beef jerky pal, who also knows about the cannabis industry, John Bailey from Top 10 Produce in Salinas, who is also a lawyer.
Growers are growers, whatever their product may be. You know, most of them are growers of fruits and vegetables. That's kind of what they had as their primary business. And when the market changes and there's a new crop to grow, they will grow that new crop. Okay, this is now a legal crop. I'm going to grow this legal crop in addition to the other legal crops that I'm already producing. And they're selling their product to the edible producers. So like Altai Brands here in Salinas is the first one that came in. They will buy product. They'll buy like oils and they will infuse that into the food at their plant. The new crop here is the people that are taking the raw plant and they're extracting the oils for the edible producers. I don't think most of the edible producers are just putting in raw plant. To my understanding, they're putting in oils that have been extracted from the plant. And so you just have a supply chain. You have the grower growing the raw cannabis plant. Maybe they're selling it and having someone else dry it. From what I see, it's being dried by the grower. So they're also producing a dry product. They're selling that to be extracted into oils. They can do it with CO2. They can do it with more volatile things, I think, like butane. But, you know, CO2 is a big one. If you just kind of look online and you look for different types of oil extraction, you can see all the different ways they do it. CO2 is a big one. They're selling that to be extracted into oils, and then they're taking that oil and putting that oil into all sorts of different kinds of foods. It's a mainstream, large-scale business.
And that's all traceable.
Each seed is given a number, and that number follows that seed into a plant, that plant into the flower, that flower into the butter, and that butter into the edible. So that seed to sale is tracked completely, and then, you know, then when it's sold at the retail portion, that's also tracked. So, you know, in theory, you could sell a brownie to somebody, and you could say that came from a seed that was grown in, you know, where whatever area.
This is all really fascinating. A whole food industry I didn't even know existed. Of course, we have to remember that this is legal in California, not across the country. And cannabis is still heavily regulated by the federal government, which at the moment is not very happy with California's new laws.
On New Year's Day, California joined the growing list of states and the District of Columbia where it is now legal to sell marijuana. While state and local leaders may see marijuana as a taxable cash crop, the Trump administration has a different point of view. On Thursday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinded an Obama administration policy that discouraged federal prosecutors, in most instances, from bringing charges in places where marijuana is legal under state law. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is John Hudak, the Deputy Director of the Center for Effective Public Management at the Brookings Institution.
What the Attorney General is calling for is the freeing up for U.S. attorneys, for federal prosecutors, to start to go after state legal marijuana businesses who are complying with state law and are serving customers in states that have chosen to reform their marijuana laws, something that the Obama administration put protections in against. The Trump administration is repealing that.
Do you ever have any fear that the feds will come after you?
Yes, a little bit more now that he is really trying to get us all shut down. So that fear is, it used to be one that you never really thought about. You knew it could happen, but it really wasn't anything that you knew that could really happen. Well, because nobody was focusing on it.
And the president had made it public that he wasn't going to have the feds enforce it.
Exactly. So that helped, of course. But now it is in all of our minds. And it would be crazy for us not to be thinking about it. So it makes us a little uneasy. And that's, again, why we're maybe not going to service the adult use market. Because that's where their focus, that's their bigger focus, more than medicinal. They'll still go after all of us, but the adult use is really more the market that they're really focusing on.
That state and federal distinction affects the types of foods that can be infused with cannabis.
Beef jerky, by law, is manufactured under federal authority. So it's a USDA-inspected plant. We have a USDA inspector with a badge. And so it's not legal to manufacture cannabis-infused jerky. You hear a lot of things when you're in the business, and, you know, I don't know how much of it is rumor and how much of it is true, but I will say that I had heard a rumor that there was another company that was manufacturing a cannabis-infused beef jerky product. And I have also heard a rumor that that company is no longer producing that product. Someone perhaps got wind of it and shut that one down fairly quickly. The company, to my knowledge, is still in business, but there is not a beef jerky product being produced.
Back to California. There seems to be mostly delivery along the Central Coast and not a lot of storefronts. In fact, there are no storefronts.
You know, it's interesting. I actually was at a farmer's market and I saw a beef jerky that it looked to me like had been produced under a California regulation, which is not something that I'd been ever aware of before. Perhaps there is some authority if you're selling only within state limits that you can now produce under the craft food exception a local California beef jerky. So, you know, nothing is as I think it is, even as an attorney, knowing the law and that you need to be USDA inspected to sell in interstate commerce. I think there's perhaps some carve out for a small craft jerky producer that I'm not aware of.
San Luis Obispo County specifically, the Board of Supervisors was really strict on they did not want a food truck model. So they wanted the deliveries to have to be requested by, you know, a person, and then you go en route to that specific person rather than, you know, a food truck just kind of parks and people walk up. So I would say in this county specifically, that would make that type of model hard for edibles because they just don't allow it. I really hope that regulations will lighten up and we will be able to open brick and mortars. You know, delivery is great and, you know, delivery will always exist because people sometimes want to be discreet and don't want to go into stores and, you know, delivery can be a good option for other people that can't get out of their homes. But there's a lot of patients, customers that want to look at products, that want to talk about products, that want to be educated on products. And that's kind of hard to do on a delivery service model.
And Sean isn't alone in that thinking. John Bailey up in Salinas speculates on a broader range of cannabis foodstuffs.
That's cooking with meat. That's not like a USDA-inspected facility, which is a whole different animal. If you're cooking with meat, you know, and a lot of craft food makers will make little pies and things that have some sausage in it or whatnot. I think that can fall under the craft food exception. You know, I don't know how legal it is, but I do know that there are tons of companies where there are chefs that are cooking cannabis-infused food. There's whole, you know, shows about it. I imagine that it is, in the state of California, well understood that that's going on. Certainly with it being recreationally legal within the state of California, I think it probably happens often. And I think it's going to happen more and more often. I think the ship has sailed on cannabis-infused food products, but it's absolutely positively not in the more traditional channels yet. So it's not in a restaurant. It's not even in a farmer's market. You just absolutely don't see it.
Okay, so no restaurants. But what about festivals?
Here's kind of a quirky twist on the whole kind of cannabis-infused meat, right? Because we're making the distinction between USDA and California, right?
Correct.
So the question would be, we go to one of these big food festivals where the meat is being prepared on site, and somebody cleverly is like, well, mine is Applewood cannabis smoked tri-tip, and they're doing, you know, they're doing the smoking with the wood chips and the cannabis at the same time. Where does that fall? I could see that happening,
you know,
actually.
I wouldn't want to be that person if somebody decided to make an example of them, I guess is how I would feel. I think just because there's a lack of enforcement doesn't mean that there's not a law against doing it. And so what I would say that is a gray area. The key is, where is it being done? Who is your audience? If you're talking about a festival or a fair where it's cannabis focused, I don't think there's any illusions of any of the participants that there's cannabis infused food there. But if you try to do it at your local farmer's market, I think there may be more of an issue.
Here's Sean Bean's view.
I would say no. Possibly at some point, we always go back to being compliant. I always say I'm in the compliance game first and the cannabis game second, because it, you know, if you're not compliant, then your business isn't going to last long. So there is a state license that allows you to put on events. I don't know how many people have applied for them, probably very few, but you know, it will allow you to host a cannabis event, maybe some sort of trade show. It's also hard because free samples, there's some issues with giving out free samples. So I don't exactly know how all that would shake out, but there would definitely be some hurdles that would have to be gotten over in order for that to happen.
I have definitely learned a lot. But one aspect of edibles that was impressed upon me by both delivery services was education.
But I will take some time to educate my employees on how to educate my customers and patients, especially when it comes to edibles. The flower, the smokable flower, not a whole lot of education there needed. But I would say 75% of my edible buyers, at least the first time, have questions and or require, you know, a little bit extra attention. And those questions may be, how much should I eat? How long should I wait? And those are great questions and something that, you know, I spend time talking to them and I will train my employees to spend time talking to them, because the old problem of, oh, I took a bite, I didn't feel anything in 10, 15, 20 minutes, 1 hour, so I took another bite. And now when it all kicks in about the 2 hour time frame, you've eaten too much. The way I always say is, start with 5 to 10 milligrams, maybe depending on the person's size, you know, a larger person, maybe start with 10 milligrams, wait 2 hours. If you still feel like, okay, I would like to eat a little more, go ahead and try a little more. You can always eat more. You can never eat less. Being cautious is important.
The best bet for someone if they're going to use an edible is to find something that is microdosed. Whether you break off a piece of chocolate and it's 2.5 milligrams, you eat a Kiva mint, it's 2.5 milligrams, or anything you're going to get, you want to know the milligrams that you're going to be eating per dose. And when you do that, you want to wait 45 minutes before you eat any more. If you eat one dose and in 45 minutes you don't feel anything, you might want to add a quarter more and start in very slow increments, because some people's metabolism moves a little bit slower and they might not kick in and get any effect from it for 90 minutes. So 45 minutes is a good judge to see if you're how your body's reacting to it. But for a new user, I would wait 90 minutes before you increased. I would start out very slow. And that's what we do with all of our patients. We start out everybody very slow. We don't want them to get high and then they say, you got me high, it's not going to work, I'm not going to do it anymore.
As with any food or drink, overconsumption can be an issue with cannabis edibles.
Problems that we see from Colorado is accidental ingestion by, you know, kids, and over-ingestion. So the state of California has made some rules which, some of which I agree with, some of which I might not, but one of the rules is that they're doing away with what are called high-dose edibles. So just to put some numbers out there, a high-dose edible might be 1,000 milligrams, and that might be all in one brownie. That would be a very, very high-dose edible, 500 milligrams, 300 milligrams, all still classified as high-dose edibles. What they're doing is they're making each edible to be individually like a smaller cookie, and that cookie can be a maximum of 10 milligrams. So that will hopefully cut down on the accidental over-ingestion. I really am hesitant to use the word overdose because most people associate overdose with death. The LD50, which would be the lethal dose of cannabis, is so high that no human could ingest enough edible cannabis to actually die. So I am hesitant to use the word overdose, and I like to use the word overconsumption. Making each edible be 10 milligrams will help with that. Another interesting kind of development is, at least locally in San Luis Obispo, they made some moves to restrict edibles in the shape of candies, such as gummy bears or gummy worms, to try to help children have accidental ingestion. I think that's great. I have two kids myself. I would not want one of them to get a hold of an edible, so that makes sense to me.
The edibles industry and regulations have found ways to foster the responsible user.
Probably the most, what I feel are unique, and people probably don't even know they're out there, is there's a company called Kiva. They're up north in out of Oakland, and they make chocolate bars, but they also make chocolate-covered blueberries. They look like Altoids, kind of. They're in a little tin, mints. Those are a little more unusual versus the baked good. And what I really like about those is they're microdosed. A new user to edibles needs to start with a very low amount until they know how it's going to affect them. And with Kiva and some of the others out there, they make their products already microdosed for you. So every piece of whatever, whether it's a blueberry or a mint, you take it out of that tin, it's got the exact same amount of medicine in it. So you know exactly what you're taking and you can regulate yourself with using it. If some people want to use a cookie, we have cookies. But a lot of people, we have some products that are kind of like a little Tootsie Roll. And I like those for people to sleep only because they're very easy to cut the product. So they can get one edible. The packaging might say it's 4 servings, but everybody's body's different. So you all need different amounts of cannabis depending on what you're using it for. And with these products, you can cut them. So I use one of those products and I get 16 doses out of it. So it's just really a cost-effective way as well for people to use a edible. That's really the biggest thing. And myself, I don't want to smoke or vape. So it's an ease of use as well.
Also, child-resistant packaging is a big thing. You know, a kid cannot just walk up to a package and open it up. They're just like any medication, child-resistant packaging. And I always suggest to people that they keep it in that packaging. Because, you know, once it's out on the counter and it's not put back into the resealable package, mistakes can be made.
I'm going to give Tammy the last word. In my quest to make a cannabis chocolate cake for the one friend I have who I know uses marijuana, I found out that it's not as easy as stirring dried marijuana leaves into a cake batter. Sean, John, and Tammy's comments to responsible distribution and use of cannabis products should be commended. And Tammy sums up why it might be better and safer to buy one of her products rather than creating with cannabis in my own kitchen.
Edibles get a really bad rap. Because the media is always trying to say that these college kids get edibles and they're losing their lives, and people always want to blame cannabis for that. What people need to know about edibles is it's not like smoking a joint, a vape, anything that you would inhale. And there's not a lot of education about edibles. The average person needs to realize if you're getting an edible from a friend of yours makes it or you make it at home, you could put the same amount of butter in your recipe that a professional manufacturer is making, but they're making sure that that medicine is evenly dispersed in whatever product they're making. So right now the state has lowered the limit for edibles. The maximum an edible can be is 100 milligrams and each dose is 10 milligrams and no more. Now, with the person making edibles at home, they could put 100 milligrams of medicine in something, but 50% of that can end up in one bite. So you have to remember that, one, the manufactured product is going to start out being safer for you because the medicine is going to be evenly dispersed in whether it's a cookie or it's a piece of chocolate. Two, you have to remember that if you get a cookie, you don't want to eat the whole cookie. You want to eat maybe a quarter of the cookie. You want to wait at least 45 minutes before you eat any more. And if you're drinking alcohol, you're not going to want to do that edible because, yes, the alcohol and the cannabis are going to mix together in your system and it could intensify everything, the effects of it. When people want to say that they're bad, look at all these accidents that are happening with, you know, these college kids. It's because they're drinking, they're eating the whole thing. After 15 minutes, they're like, oh, I'm not high, I'm not getting anything. So they eat another one. So it's all about being responsible and knowing how much medicine's in that product.
And looking at the price of one brownie or cookie from the delivery services, I think I'll just let my friend obtain his own edibles. I'll just make him a nice dinner from the cornucopia of other produce available on the Central Coast and leave the cannabis edibles to those who know what they're doing. You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food.